This podcast of Left, Right, and Center is a production of KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com. Support for KCRW podcasts comes from the Southern California Lexus dealers.
From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, this is Left, Right, and Center.
You like potato?
And you like potato?
You like tomato?
And you like tomato?
Potato?
Potato?
Tomato?
Tomato?
White House in free fall. Libby indicted. Harriet's gone. Now what? Hello again. Welcome to Left, Right, and Center, your civilized yet provocative antidote to the screaming talking heads that dominate political debate. I'm Matt Miller, columnist for Fortune magazine and senior fellow at the Center for American Progress, holding down the center here on Left, Right, and Center. Joining me on the left side of our Santa Monica studio and the political spectrum is Robert Scheer, a syndicated columnist based at the Los Angeles Times. On the right from Washington, as always, is Tony Blankley, editorial page editor and columnist for the Washington Times and author of The West's Last Chance, Will We Win the Clash of Civilizations? And also in the Los Angeles area, but we're reaching her from her headquarters of the HuffingtonPost.com is our own Arianna Huffington, editor-in-chief of the Huffington Post. Welcome all from across the political spectrum, a very big week. Listeners should know that as we went to air, the actual news conference that Special Prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald is holding is actually still underway, announcing the indictment of Louis Libby, the vice president's chief of staff. That means this is one of those rare instances that does happen in the news business where you'll be getting real-time punditry, where we are giving you the instant analysis, even as the news occurs, knowing that in different areas of the left, right, and center universe, this punditry may even feel dated by the time you receive it, but it will be delivered with sufficient amusement and insight as to be relevant beyond even this decade. Tony Blankley, with that as a setup, what do you make of it? Let me try it. And I did not see all of the live news conference as I headed to the studio, but as I understand it, and if I'm speed reading the indictment here in between with one eye on the mic and one eye on the indictment, that the vice president's chief of staff, Louis Libby, who has resigned immediately in the wake of this, is saying that the indictment charges that he obstructed justice, committed perjury, and it was largely for the for materially false and intentionally misleading statements in conversations that Libby had with Tim Russert of NBC, Matt Cooper of Time, and Judith Miller of the New York Times. And the lies that are alleged is that Libby misled the grand jury about the truthfulness of what he actually spoke about with those reporters. Am I capturing that right? And Tony or others?
As best as I understand it, yes. Look, from a judicial point of view, these are five serious felonies. And if the evidence is there at trial to support a conviction, then everybody should take these as serious felonies and a very bad breach of standards by Mr. Libby. And the sentencing should be according to the guidelines of the federal guidelines for sentencing for such offenses. And I don't want to in any way diminish the seriousness of these charges. As a former prosecutor, I believe deeply in the importance of honest testimony under oath. And this is perjury, which is the opposite of that. And it means that he is intentionally misstated a material fact. And at this point, it's an allegation, but based on what we've heard so far from the independent counsel, it seems to be strongly supported by the evidence as he presents it. That's the judicial significance of this. Now, obviously, most people are more interested in the political significance. Politically, this was something less than the White House feared might happen or that the White House's opponents hoped might happen. They did not charge with the actual leaking of the material, although according to the independent counsel, it seemed pretty clear that they believed and had evidence to support that Mr. Libby had given information that a confidential agent's name out to the public. The question of why he wasn't charged We don't have a specific answer from the prosecutor, although he listed the four criteria for deciding to charge, and either there wasn't sufficient evidence for it, or the evidence did not merit prosecution. We don't know which of those he decided to end this process without regarding Mr. Libby on these charges without filing that charge. Politically, I think there's a half of a sigh of relief in the White House today, but only a half.
And part of that being, and Arianna, I want to get you into this, is that Karl Rove was not indicted today, but the prosecutor still said that we don't know for sure yet if there won't be more indictments coming. Is that right, Arianna? And tell us what take it where you would in terms of adding to our understanding or your take on it.
Yes, absolutely. He did say that the investigation is ongoing in terms of what else will come up, including about the fate of Karl Rove, that's still to be decided. But most important, I totally agree with what Tony said about the judicial significance of this, but I disagree about the political significance. There is no question that this really takes us to, again, the lies and deceptions that were used to cover up the lies and deceptions that led us to war. And it's very clear that Libby, really, he took a bet. He took a bet and he lost that the reporters would stay mum and go to jail on his behalf, or that somehow the First Amendment would save him here. And the reporters did not stay mum. The reporters spoke and he lost the bet. But the fact that he was willing to go so far shows how determined they were to cover up all the lies that led us to war. And now this is going to be the media are now paying attention. We have a great blog on the Huffington Post right now by Marty Kaplan, in which he says the media love Meta. For them, it's sexy to speculate about a preemptive pardon, but it's wonky to actually investigate a preemptive war. So now that the media are paying attention, we have more and more stories that are not directly related that are coming out, including Doug Gell in Friday's New York Times about the Niger forgeries that were related to how uranium supposedly was being obtained by Saddam. And that's, for me, the most interesting and politically most damaging aspect of this for the investigation and for the White House.
Bob?
Yeah, first of all, I think some reporters did investigate these lies. I wrote a book with my son and Lakhmijadi called The Five Biggest Lies Bush Told Us About Iraq. So we're trying to do our bit here. Let me just say something about what I think is involved here. First of all, as far as not charging on the 1982, the prosecutor was very clear about this. He said,
what does
yes,
that mean, the 1982?
Well, this was the outing of the CIA agent. And it's a difficult
knowingly outing a
knowing, and you have to show intent knowingly out. And at the press conference, he was very clear about this. He said, this is a baseball analogy, a pitcher has hit a player in the head, okay? So there's no question about the seriousness and the breach of national security and endangering lives. He was very clear about this. Someone was hit in the head, okay? But then you have to show that the pitcher didn't do it by accident. There are shades of gray. What were their intent? And he just made it very clear. It's a very difficult charge to prove because you have to go to intent. However, I want to take up the serious political implication here for a democracy. What the prosecutor said is, had the reporters cooperated and not dragged this all the way to the Supreme Court, this case would have been closed a year ago. Okay? A year ago, October of 2004, if Libby had been indicted, I can assure you John Kerry would be president of the United States. Let's not forget that. So the objective consequence, one can say, of these reporters pretending, I think, to take the high road, pretending, I would argue, when they were in fact concealing what they knew to be a crime, concealing it, the objective result of that is the American people were cheated of information they needed to make a choice about the future president of the United States. So the journalists in this case betrayed their obligation to inform the public while they protected someone who they knew was lying, because what the prosecutor said was, Libby told the grand jury and the FBI investigators he was at the end of the chain of information, that he got it from reporters. He didn't even know whether Wilson was married. A bald lie like that, okay? And it was the reporters that gave him the information, and he just passed it on saying, I didn't know if it was true or not. What the prosecutor was able to determine that was a bald lie, that this guy was at the was at the beginning of the chain of this information, not at the end. And the reporters had to know that, because I just heard Russett on television now finally saying, oh, I said to the Grand Jury that he didn't have this information for me and so forth.
But Russert did testify. Cooper and Miller did not.
I understand.
Russert testified very early, just so we should be fair.
I understand. What I am saying is that now we know what he testified was, no, it was a lie, because after all, Libby said he got the information from Russert, and Russert said, no, I didn't give him the information.
That's
information
important
that readers and viewers have a right to have, as
and
well as
absolutely
voters.
Absolutely. And what Bob is saying is incredibly important, because as Fitzgerald stressed today, witnesses do not have any legal obligation to remain silent. So Russert could have told the American public, indeed he should have told his viewers, that he basically had not said anything to Libby, and that Libby was lying when he kept insisting that he had heard it from Russert and other reporters. He never said that. He refused to answer all questions, and the same, of course, goes for Judy Miller and the New York Times, that clearly delayed this investigation dramatically by taking it all the way to the Supreme Court.
Do we know, obviously there's a lot of different sub-areas you can get into, but I don't know if we know that Russert knew that Libby had said he didn't get it from him. He may have just been testifying directly on what his conversation with Libby was. I'm just trying to be fair to Russert.
No, Russert said he was on NBC today, and he said that what he had told the jury was that he was not, did not have this information, did not give it to him, was not part of the conversation. It was a bald lie.
No, okay. But I think what Matt meant was, did he know that Libby had lied, or was he merely saying, what did you know when you talked to Libby?
And what'd you tell him? Right.
No, because
we don't know whether the prosecutor told Libby, told Russert before he asked him the question, here's what Libby says, is that true? Or whether he simply said, what did he say to you? I would guess, being a former prosecutor at least, that you would not ask a leading question that would induce an answer, but rather would simply ask the witness, Russert in this case, what did you say to him? What did he say to you?
But so I don't want to get a sidetracked on that, but it's only to say let's reserve judgment on whether the fullest critique of Russert as withholding before the election would be fair. I'm not sure that's true. I don't think we can solve it on right now, real time. But, what comes next? I mean, the crime is, right, the crime is that Libby, the crime that's alleged is that that Libby lied about his conversations with these reporters, and the implication, Bob, you're saying from the baseball analogy, is that Fitzgerald didn't think this was enough to bring the full charge on. Go ahead, Tony.
Let me suggest what I think the biggest decision that Libby has left. And that is, does he go to trial or does he plead guilty? If he insists on a trial, then that has very large negative political consequences for the Bush administration. Even if nothing more comes out than we know now, you would have months and months of trial, weeks and weeks, certainly, of testimony being taken, counsel calling all sorts of people, conceivably very high officials, and that would be damaging even if there were no damaging information come out, the mere process. And if damaging information exists and were to come out, it could be more damaging. So Libby, who presumably was motivated by his various alleged perjuries and obstructions of justice out of some sense of misguided loyalty to either people or institutions or ideas. Now the question is he prepared to, if that presumption is right, is he once more prepared to be loyal and simply plead guilty? I don't know the answer to that, but it's a huge decision that he has to make.
Up ahead, hold that thought, up ahead, more on the Libby indictment, plus that old story about Harriet Hu. You're listening to Left, Right, and Center.
Find more Left, Right, and Center programs and podcasts at kcrw.com.
Back again with Left, Right, and Center. I'm Matt Miller in the center. Robert Scheer is with me on the left. Tony Blankley in Washington on the right. Ariana Huffington cross town in Los Angeles today and also somewhere beyond. Ariana, one thing that this does raise, and we're obviously discussing the Libby indictment, which is the wall-to-wall news on Friday as we go to air, that it does, and everyone has to be sufficiently our listener. We have to assume a certain amount of listener involvement in the arcana of these things. But Judy Miller had gotten a letter from Libby that was sort of seeming to, I don't know if it was trying to coach her testimony, but sort of saying that, of course, I wanted you to testify like others, that because anyone who told the truth would be good for me, and at least on the terms of what the charges are that are being brought, that would not be true, right?
Well, obviously. And also, Matt, the other thing that is not true is that he mentioned in his letter to her only their July meetings. And, of course, we know that quite critical to what Fitzgerald was saying at the press conference was the June meeting. Judith Miller was the first reporter to whom Libby told about Valerie Wilson. And that is very significant because, of course, she was the reporter to whom he would go with all the lies about WMD, and she would print it on the front page of the New York Times. So that connection between Judy Miller and Libby and the whole neocon establishment selling the war on the front page of the New York Times becomes even more significant when Fitzgerald said today unambiguously that she was the first reporter. Now, how do you pick out of all hundreds of reporters Judith Miller at the New York Times? Because if Judith Miller is also correct in saying that she tried to get it in the paper and the paper would not let her because by then they were beginning to know clearly how tragically flawed her reporting had been and how she was basically being a stenographer for the administration, this would have been out even earlier, bad-mouthing Wilson before he had even written his New York Times op-ed.
Go ahead, Bob.
Well, first of all, I think a real good insight into that was provided by Arianna on the show when she said that Judy Miller had a bitch fest with Libby in which they were basically complaining. They were co-conspirators. I don't want to use that term in a technical legal sense, but they...
But in a loose media kind
well,
of...
Well, I don't intend it. I don't intend to make that judgment. But, I mean, clearly they're sitting around. That's why I used Arianna's phrase, the bitch fest, and they're complaining about Joe Wilson. And so she's party to how do we get Wilson. This is not some noble First Amendment thing. This is somebody becoming a political hack. And speaking of political hacks, what I think is going to come out and prove very embarrassing is that, first of all, now we know that Cheney was the original source of information for Libby. He's involved. Now, maybe that won't rise to a legal case, but we have three branches of government. And there certainly needs to be a congressional investigation. And this would certainly happen if we didn't have total Republican domination. But I think there are a number of Republican congressional people who will, in the interest of fairness, demand an investigation as to what was the role of the executive branch in a number of things. This administration claimed to be very concerned about national security, undermining the CIA, undermining people that are working, trying to figure out where our weapons of mass destruction, which is after what Valerie Plame was involved with around the world. I think, and Congress, of course, was lied to on these matters. So I think a congressional investigation is very much in order. There may also be a civil lawsuit by Wilson and Plame, which will bring out all sorts of information. So this is not going to go away. This is going to dominate our political life until the very next election. And I think if the great fear I would have if I were the Bush for his reputation is that, you know, at some new administration and some new Senate, some point, new House, could investigate this in a way that would be very embarrassing, and he might have the fate of Richard Nixon.
Tony, what put this in context also, the other big news, obviously, which is happening and almost seems, you know, suddenly it's yesterday's news, but Harriet Myers has withdrawn, obviously because of her deep concern for executive privilege and the fact that those things might have been done. I was struck, by the way, but this scenario is exactly what Charles Krauthammer wrote in his Washington Post column last Friday, and it looked like, so maybe he was in cahoots, just like Judy Miller in some way, to cook up the exit strategy, but it is what happened. What does that mean on top of all this, Tony? Isn't it time for you guys just to pack your bags and go home?
I don't think so. Actually, I am home, to be technically accurate. But it used not to be home, but it is now. I'm in the swamp with all the other alligators splashing around.
Because he has an accent.
But, no, I think that yesterday's announcement was extraordinarily good news for Republicans and conservatives, assuming that the president now nominates a fully qualified
and documented and brilliant conservative justice to the Supreme Court. I had done a column earlier this week, you know, arguing that the best thing the president could do would be to get rid of Myers, to call for budget cuts, to and a couple of other issues, secure the borders too, and deal with get on the right side rhetorically of the gas price increases, to get the base Republicans to snap back to his support. I think that is happening after the announcement that the Myers has been withdrawn. Nobody believes the fig leaf that it was over the issue of not giving up documents. It's a completely transparent fig leaf, which means it doesn't function in its intended capacity. We can see through it. And the fact is that this is an extraordinarily happy moment for the future expectations of conservatives. Then everyone's looking forward to a wonderful brawl with Barbara Boxer and Chuck Schumer over liberalism versus conservatism on the court. It's one that Republicans and conservatives will win with the public by about 60-40%, I would say. And the worst thing that's been happening to the president for his polls has been the image of Republicans fighting with each other, and that now is over.
I think he's got more image problems on the way, though. Ariana, what do you think of Harriet?
Actually, Matt, you mentioned Krauthammer, but our very own Tony Blankley also in his column this week, ahead of the news, recommended as the first bold step that the president take to withdraw the unfortunate nomination of Harriet Myers, as he put it. And the timing, of course, we have to admit, was perfect. They got it out of the way before the indictment, and now it's like it seems like a footnote, and nobody will care by next week.
I don't want us to leave, by the way, and Bob, I want to get you into this on the Harriet Myers thing, but there was a in the pre-show banter that sometimes occurs on our show, there was talk about Patrick Fitzgerald, the special prosecutor, is perhaps some new American sex symbol, Ariana. Do you want to, resident member of the opposite sex, there was...
Now that we dealt with all the significant parts of the story...
Let's get to the serious stuff.
Let me just say how incredibly adorable Patrick Fitzgerald is. He does this amazing combination of gravitas, the way he just gave us the context, the national security implications, and absolute adorability with all these metaphors, the baseball metaphor, the throwing sand in your eyes metaphor, the bank robbery metaphor. I mean, this is a guy who clearly has poetry as well as facts on his side. And I predict there is going to be a long line of women.
But regretfully, he's already married to Lady Justice, I think.
But I didn't know that. As to quote Libby, I didn't know Wilson was married.
Bob, Harriet Myers.
Yeah.
Unless you want to comment on Patrick Fitzgerald's sex appeal in some way.
Or Harriet Myers. You know, I'm very broad in this sense. Forgiving. But let me say, I suspect we're not going to be so happy with Tony's choice for the next one. I mean, is it a Scalia? Are we supposed to be thrilled that they
will
find?
Well, you won't be, but
yes.
I would.
Well, but let me raise the questions for maybe our listeners. You know, I mean, there are some very big issues, and you make it sound like, well, he's loyal to the base. First of all, I'm not even sure what that base believes in, but if it doesn't believe in separation of church and state, if it doesn't believe in a woman's right to privacy and the right to choose, if it doesn't believe that Darwin can be taught in the schools, these are all issues that are coming up. If it doesn't believe that gay people have the same civil rights as straight people, these are very – it doesn't believe – if it's a court that doesn't believe the president has to be accountable to the Congress and to the people and not lie, if it's a court that doesn't believe that torture is unconstitutional, these are the kinds of issues we're faced with. And when you tell me this base is going to have its way, that's a base which so far has registered itself of being as on the anti-civil liberties side and on the anti-humanitarian side of all of those issues.
But one thing that's clear...
It's not exactly a dispassionate description of conservatism, but I think the nominee is likely to be somebody who is going to be very well qualified and will not be caricaturable in the manner in which you have suggested.
The one thing that does seem clear, is that the idea of appeasing his base seems certainly smart politics on the eve of what's going to be now a very long and sustained political crisis for the White House related to these indictments. Right, Tony?
Oh, surely. Obviously, that's why the timing is so good, because he doesn't need the liberals. He only needs part of the moderates, but he needs all of the conservatives because we're going into an election cycle in which the House conceivably could be vulnerable if the same atmospherics and conditions existed a year from now as it exists now. He needs to have the Republicans and the conservatives supporting him and fighting together on issues that tend to split the country favorably to conservatives. And they're the fundamental issues of our time. And if passions are sincerely held on both sides, it'll be a good, honest public debate.
We just got about a minute before we ramp, but Arianna, since we're rounding out the weekly Judy Miller watch, there was word in various reports this week that she's in severance negotiations with the New York Times. Anything you want to add or share in terms of where all this stands related to?
I'm hearing that they're very far apart when it comes to the money part of the operation, and that one of the things apparently that she's holding against them is the fact that she has been offered a very substantial prize from some Israel foundation of over $1 million, apparently. We don't know what that prize exactly is for, which the Times is very, very concerned that she should not take because it's not exactly what journalists are supposed to do. And she's holding that up as a way for them to make sure they give her the kind of money that she wants as part of her severance package.
You mean a prize that is being offered to her?
A prize that has been offered to
her. I
see. And she's deciding whether to accept it or not. There's a lot of pressure on her from the New York Times not to accept it, which would be another nail on the coffin of her being a journalist. And Arthur Sulzberger continues quietly to defend her, but Bill Keller is increasingly taking, I hear, the sort of the part of the newsroom, which would be appalled at their high severance packet.
We'll be watching all this. What a week. We have reached that time once again for our famed end of show, Left, Right, and Center Rant, featuring pet peeves from across the ideological spectrum. Tony Blankley, it is your soapbox.
Once again, not a peeve, but sort of half of a prediction. I think that Arthur Sulzberger Jr., the publisher of the New York Times, may begin to be vulnerable for holding his position. The family that owns the controlling share of the voting stock cannot be happy with the manner in which he has managed the paper over the last 5 or 10 years. And I see no end of further pulling and fighting within the New York Times newsroom, which is, I believe, a tragedy because, as I wrote a few years ago, it is the single greatest news gathering organization in the world. And if it were to break down much further than it has, there would be a gap left in our capacity to know concrete, specific information about the world.
20 seconds, Arianna Huffington.
Well, actually, just to piggyback on what Tony said, he's absolutely right. There are a lot of rumblings on the New York Times board. The family does have the control of the voting shares, but there are also 80% of the non-voting shares owned by shareholders who are additionally very unhappy about the circulation, the layoffs, the advertising revenue, the stock price. So absolutely, I think here I can completely agree with Tony.
15 seconds, Bob Scheer.
Well, really what's at issue here is not the New York Times, but a whole notion of investigative journalism, which forgot the old motto of comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable. Instead, investigative journalism has come to be passing on the lies of entrenched people right up into the White House. And this was not the first example with the New York Times. They had the Wenho Lee case where an innocent person spent 9 months in solitary confinement because of their supposed aggressive reporting. I think it's time to reexamine whose side you're on in these matters.
Other big news this week, we'll have to come back to huge, record-breaking oil profits because of the enormous run-up in gas and oil prices. This is going to be something to look at in terms of potential political interest by both parties who are going to see outsized profits in a way that don't seem related to kind of a sense of earned return. That's all the earned return we've got time for, Dan, Left, Right, and Center. Thanks, as always, to Bob Scheer, Tony Blankley, and Arianna Huffington. Sarah Spitz produced today's program. Our technical director is Ray Guarna. I'm Matt Miller. Thanks for listening. Tune in next week for another exciting edition of Left, Right, and Center.
You got pajamas.
But we know we need each other. So we better call the calling of all.
Audio archives and podcasts of KCRW programs are at kcrw.com. For questions and comments about Left, Right, and Center, email lrc@kcrw.com. Left, Right, and Center is produced and distributed by 89.9 KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com.
You've been listening to KCRW's Left, Right, and Center. KCRW offers more than 20 podcasts, including Le Show, a weekly romp through the worlds of media, politics, sports, and show business with satirist Harry Shearer. Check out the podcast of Le Show at kcrw.com.